3, 2, 1.
That's the biggest night of my career.
All these people have come from all over the world tonight just to be here.
Don't just dump them. Float them in the wind. It should be magical.
It only happens once a year. New Year's Eve. Okay. It's a time when hopeless can be romantic. Last year, I met a woman, and she was extraordinary.
You're gonna meet her, aren't you?
And a resolution can become a revelation.
That looks like a long list. You better get on it.
If you can make these resolutions come true by midnight, you get these.
4 tickets to that party? You called the right guy.
And when one night can change everything.
No. This thing is dead.
It doesn't work.
Call the super.
He doesn't work either.
You sound like you have cotton balls in your nose, which is very appropriate for Christmas time.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I feel. Yeah, I mean, I'm fine. It's just, it's not COVID, it's not flu, it's not RSV. It's literally just a cold like I always get this time of year. So it's all fine. It's all
fine. Do you always get a cold at this time of year?
Oh, yeah, in the winter, yeah.
Oh! Yeah.
And I'm miserable for like a week, mm-hmm. and then I just kind of feel generally cruddy for the rest of my life.
And happy new year from Probably Should Have Known Better, the podcast where we celebrate comedy that has aged very poorly. I'm Nadia Vasquez, and in our ensemble today, we have one of the coolest guys, the ludicrous to my Hillary Swank, Tony Ginocchio.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Michael Bloomberg!
He looks like a corpse compared to all of the really beautiful celebrities in this movie. Just a dead man.
Well, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you too, Nadia. Folks, guys, oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
What have you done? This is your choice.
We try to do, like, Christmas episodes every year because they're fun. I like doing them. We've done two of the Home Alone films. We've done While You Were Sleeping. We did
A Christmas Story, and we made people Christmas mad about
story. It. People got really mad at us for doing A Christmas Story. But, when we were planning the season, I was like, I want to do something kind of different. And so, sight unseen, I said, let's do Gary Marshall's New Year's Eve from 2011. And I hadn't seen it. Nadia, you hadn't seen mm-hmm. it. I believe I watched it first out of the two of us. And 15 minutes into the film, I texted Nadia, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen in my life.
Which in ironically detached person speak means it was terrible.
It's just... this is an unparalleled achievement in how stupid a movie can be, and I am so glad that we watched it for this show. So, folks, again, the film is titled New Year's Eve from 2011, directed by the legendary writer, director, and producer Gary Marshall, starring, oh boy, here we go.
Hang on.
Hilary Swank. Ludacris, Ashton Kutcher, Lea Michele, Josh Duhamel, Seth Meyers, Sarah Paulson, Jessica Biel, Halle Berry, Carrie Elwes, Michelle Pfeiffer, Zac Efron, Abigail Breslin, Sarah Jessica Parker, John Bon Jovi, Russell Peters, Sofia Vergara, Robert De Niro, Hector Elizondo, with Ryan Seacrest and Mayor Michael Bloomberg as themselves.
Just too many people. That's too many people. There's too many storylines. The movie is too long.
How bad were you hoping that during the movie there would be another 9/11?
I did kind of hope that, like, Zac Efron would, like, get hit because he's a courier on a bike.
You're right.
I was yes. like, I want him to get hit by a car. I want this to end. I want this movie. I don't want to hear Lea Michele sing twice.
So what audience, if you're not familiar with this film, Gary Marshall made three of these movies, actually. So to back up, 20 years ago, a movie came out called Love Actually, and it made a bunch of money. And Gary Marshall was like, how can I also make a bunch of money? So he took the formula for Love Actually, which is we're going to have an all-star cast, and we're going to have like 20 different storylines that none of them can fill out even a sitcom episode by themselves, but if we put them in the same movie, and if we, like, say, oh, one guy is that guy's brother, and then people would be like, oh, it's all connected.
Yeah. And if you include dialogue that says, hey, sis, hey, bro, then that'll right. all make sense.
That's it. Ties the knot right there. Mm-hmm. So he made three of these. He made Valentine's Day in 2010, I believe. He made New Year's Eve in 2011, and then in 2016, he made Mother's Day. And right after he made Mother's Day, God said, that's enough out of you, buddy, and killed him.
Ricky, rest in peace. Rest in peace. Truly, Gary Marshall made some incredible stuff. He wrote incredible things. He was in Never Been Kissed recently that we just covered.
Yes.
And incredible person. But
incredible,
like,
legacy of television.
But you know that at the end of his life, he's like, I gotta leave money for my kids. So I gotta make three of the worst movies you've ever seen. And New Year's Eve is one of them.
Gary Marshall, one of the only directors in history, this is true, to have made three different movies that have been featured on the Probably Should Have Been Known Better podcast.
This is true. Yeah, Adam Shankman, you're next.
Yeah, Adam Shankman's up to two. Tom Shadyac had three. But Gary Marshall made this. He made The Other Sister from season one. And he made Princess Diaries from season five. This movie, if you've ever seen the episode of 30 Rock where everybody's celebrating Leap Day and Liz Lemon is like, what the fuck is wrong with all of you? This is the Leap Day movie.
Yes, yes. So. It's not really about anything. They want to say that, at the beginning of the movie, they say that some people say there's no beauty left in the world, no magic. This thesis statement is that he's going to prove that wrong with this movie. But the real magic was when the movie ended, because then I could move on with my life.
Just the the thing, I don't even know if it's worth, like, trying to summarize the plot, because, again, there's 20 storylines, and they're all very slight. But the central, the key to the movie, which is set in New York City, of course, the key to this movie is the idea that people coming to the ball drop in Times Square represents, like, the pinnacle of human hope, and not hundreds of thousands of the biggest fucking idiots in the world pissing in bottles for 8 hours.
Truly, so much pressure is put on this ball that, like, I'm pretty sure nobody gives a shit about, except for, like, I don't know, middle-aged women in the Midwest who love Dick Clark, but he died. So they're like, I guess Ryan Seacrest is fine.
The one funny line in the movie is when Ryan Seacrest is like, this never would have happened to Dick Clark.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah. May he rest in peace, by the way. We love Dick Clark.
Rest in peace.
Vegan king.
But yeah, so for those of you out there that are like, I haven't seen this movie, what? It's like New Year's Eve and, like, the ball breaks and they have to figure out how to fix it before midnight. Yes, that's exactly what happens.
I mean, were they shooting it on New Year's Eve? Because that would have really disrupted New Year's Eve.
I don't think they did. I think they shot it. They probably shot it in, like, April, right? Mm. With the intention of releasing it, you know, in December of 2011.
Sure.
But this opening monologue from Hilary Swank, and again, it's just a ripoff of Love Actually, but you hear Hilary Swank saying, some people swear there's no beauty left in the world, no magic. Then how do you explain the whole world coming together in one night to celebrate the hope of a new year? Oh my God.
Yeah. There's just, like, way too much pressure on New Year's Eve in general. It's kind of like
in general.
It's kind of like, you know, Valentine's Day. Not even the Gary Marshall movie. I'm just talking, like, the concept of Valentine's Day, where it's like, you guys have to be romantic and you have to fuck tonight. It's like very much like that.
You are either doing something or you are actively protesting the holiday.
Right. And if you're a couple and you're not out at a restaurant that is overcrowded and underserved, right, like, you're doing something wrong. You're not romantic. And
with a $90 prefix menu, then, yeah.
I mean, we don't sound bitter at all.
No.
No.
But no, you, and you don't want to be bitter. That's definitely a message in this movie. You don't want to turn into, say, Ashton Kutcher in this film, who is sort of an Ebenezer Scrooge type character for New Year's Eve, tearing down decorations and going, "Meh, this holiday is stupid." And he is my favorite character in the history of cinema.
Yeah, we'll get to him. The other thing about it is, they do kind of hit on the topic of New Year's resolutions, but not in your typical way. For some reason, Michelle Pfeiffer wants to hit all of her New Year's resolutions before midnight and not start them at the beginning of the year like normal people. Just for reason. So like, she's not dying. She's not what happened?
So we have the ball drop, we have resolutions. What about, hey, is there a storyline about maybe a teenage girl wondering who she's going to kiss at midnight, Nadia?
Oh, yeah, that's creepy. And we see a 15-year-old girl's bra. No.
Just such an incredible and completely unnecessary moment. Where she's like, "Mom, I'm not a kid anymore. Look, I got slamming titties."
Terrible. But you can't have a New Year's Eve storyline without Jon Bon Jovi.
Jon Bon Jovi playing, not Jon Bon Jovi, because they did not pay for the rights to his music at all, but paying fictional rock star Jensen.
Yeah, who is in love with Katherine Heigl. This is obviously before Katherine Heigl was blacklisted for being difficult to work with, apparently, where he apparently asked her to marry him and then ran away.
And then just ran away. Like he's a second grader calling a girl to tell her he likes her and then hanging up the phone.
Yeah, and she's like, "Yeah, I'll marry you." And he's like, "Bye." It's very strange. But
incredible casting, just a really good ear for people who would be really famous in 2011 and then never again.
Yeah, like Lea Michele.
Lea Michele, Katherine Heigl, Jessica Biel, Josh Duhamel, like all people we don't talk about.
We don't talk about anymore. But someone that we do talk about often, especially star of the fictional movie Goncharov, 1973, Robert De Niro.
So the moment where they reveal what Robert De Niro's story is going to be is when I texted you to say this is the best movie I've ever seen.
I kept screaming everyone's name every time they came onto the screen. Like when Ludacris came, I was like, "Luda!"
Ludacris. And then you're like, "Surely that's the only rapper in this movie." And they make you wait for it, but sure enough, Common sneaks in right before the end.
When is Common in the movie?
He's the troop. He's the troop that Halle Berry talks to on the
Skype
call.
That was Common? Yeah. I didn't recognize him because he was in military garb. By the way, this was a very, very pro-military movie.
Very pro-police, pro-military, like...
Unbelievable.
Guys, this movie is streaming on Tubi, which sounds made up, but it's a real streaming service and it's free.
And it's on HBO now too.
Oh, it's on HBO. Uh-huh. Guys, I am watching this every year.
truly, you could, if you do a drinking game every time a new celebrity is introduced, you will die. It's just person after person after person coming on screen, you screaming, and like Alyssa Milano is at the end as well. Like, where did she come from?
So, okay. Before we get into real detail, and guys, we haven't talked about Robert De Niro yet, and I don't want to talk about him too much. I want to save it for when we get to his scene. But before we do any of that, can we at least talk about 2011?
Yes, because this is the first time we're talking about 2011. And when I was doing research on it, I was like, this year was so boring. Was this the year we met? I think this was the year we met.
2012. Well, we met in January 2012.
Okay.
So we met right after the ball dropped. We went to improv class and to Margot's class, to storytelling class. Those were both in January 2012, and that's how we met.
Okay. So this movie came out BT, before Tony. So in 2011, I was in the first couple of levels of UCB, and the biggest hit of the year was Rihanna's We Found Love, which one time I was hanging out at Birds, which is this bar that's next to UCB.
The bar next to UCB, LA.
In Franklin Village, I mean. And that song had just come out and everyone loved it. And we were like, we started to dance. And that bar is like a chicken, like it's a rotisserie chicken place.
It's a restaurant. It's not a good dancing
No,
bar.
But everyone in the restaurant started dancing and they played We Found Love on repeat 27 times. That was one of the best nights ever. One of the best songs. That was the top song of the year. And other top songs included Katy Perry's Firework, Bruno Mars's Grenade, Britney's Hold It Against Me, Gaga's Born This Way, and Adele's Rolling in the Deep. So we were just like flush with like somewhat mediocre pop music.
Yeah, real big year for the monoculture.
So you know that this year that we were ready for New Year's Eve. Weirdly, that was also the year that Rebecca Black's Friday turned into a really big hit. Do you remember that?
Oh, okay. I do remember that.
Crazy. So, this was a really big year for memes and, like, online culture. So, we transitioned away from, current events kind of being on, like, Entertainment Tonight. Or, like, it's like pop culture current events. Uh-huh. Entertainment Tonight, Access Hollywood, all of that stuff. And it all kind of went online on Facebook. So this was a big Facebook and Snapchat year. This was the year Snapchat was released.
Okay, so this is a big year for, like, video then, too.
Yes.
Like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and this was before all of our parents and grandparents got brainwashed. So pre that. So OMG and LOL were added to the Oxford English Dictionary and became official words. This was also the year that planking and the feminist Ryan Gosling memes were
very popular. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so we're building up the time, you know. This makes a lot of sense. This in more important news, this was also the year that the U.S. repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So gay and lesbian service members were able to serve openly in the military. Osama bin Laden was killed this year. And that Situation Room picture also turned into a meme. So this is one of the first times something very serious turned into something very silly, where they like Photoshop Goku next to Hillary Clinton.
It also led to the funniest episode of a very funny show called The Newsroom, which is not a comedy, but was Aaron Sorkin's HBO series about like the set of a cable news show. And that was, you know, when the reporter gets to tell the pilot, is like, we captured bin Laden, we killed him, we did it for you, sir.
Unbelievable. When Osama bin Laden was killed and the news got out, during a Mets and Phillies game, the notification was popping up on people's phones and people were getting, like, Facebook notifications about it. And the whole crowd started chanting, USA, USA. And the players were really confused because obviously
they didn't know, right?
They had no idea what was going on. So it was, like, definitely one of, like, the funniest sports moments at the time.
Well, and The Rock knew about it before everyone else. He put it on Twitter, like, 2 hours before Obama's speech. He was like, just heard some amazing news from my cousin that's going to change the world. Hashtag USA.
What?
He knew about it.
The Rock?
And that guy can do anything. And then
Except make a popular DC movie. Got him.
John Cena knew about it too, because he announced it at a wrestling event. He was like, I have to break in here and say the U.S. military is caught and compromised to a permanent end. Osama bin Laden.
Wait, so he announced that before it was, like, announced?
I think so.
Oh, did he get in trouble?
The Rock definitely did. I don't know when Cena did it, but it was that night.
That's incredible. Well, I mean, we have to move on from that. Like, I should have said that one last, because that was a really big deal. But I also found out that a third of all divorce filings in 2011 in the United States contained the word Facebook. So you know everybody was going back to their like high school girlfriends and doing some shady shit back in the or boyfriends. This was also the year this took up probably most, if not all, of TV coverage. It was Charlie Sheen's full public meltdown.
Oh, his meltdown. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that ended up getting him fired from Two and a Half Men. And the term winning was coined, which was the most said phrase of the year. Ugh, nasty. This was also the year Anne Hathaway and James Franco hosted the Oscars, which was so bad.
I was about to say, we remember that as being bad, right?
Yes, we remember. It was like, okay. Anne Hathaway had theater kid energy and James Franco had like burnout kid energy.
Had burnout kid, but trying to sexually assault someone.
Yeah, yeah. Fuck that guy. This was also the year Kim Kardashian married Chris Humphries and filed for divorce 72 days later.
Right, and they both allegedly
earned $250,000 each from sponsorships and endorsements. So everyone was like, you cheated, America. Like, you guys were faking the whole time. And it's like, newsflash, they've been faking this entire time.
How do you think this works?
Yeah, even now. Lastly, this was the year that the Harry Potter series released its final movie, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, which made all the nerds very sad. But then the nerds were happy because Game of Thrones was premiering on HBO at the time. So, you know, you let go of one, you grab onto another one. And then little babies were named Daenerys. It was the whole thing.
Yeah, don't ever name your child after a character from a TV show that hasn't ended yet. No.
Terrible, terrible, terrible. So, yeah, 2011, it kind of is a boring year because the top TV shows were all reality shows and NCIS. Everything that was popular in pop culture was online, but, like, not in a fun way.
Yeah.
And Osama bin Laden was kind of, like, the big fun thing. Like, everyone had fun with it, which is, like, so dark.
Yeah, that was... You know, we were all just slapping each other's backs and having a laugh.
We did it. I just think it's very interesting to see. I mean, I went pretty deep into the memes that were made about it. And, like, it's very dark, the things that people were doing with that Situation Room picture.
I remember, when 9/11 happened and, you know, you and I were, like, 14 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I just remember, like, so first of all, like, still a lot of dial-up internet. So people were making memes and, like, printing them out. And handing them around.
Yeah, and putting them up in, like, cubicles and stuff.
Yeah, well, we were in school, so lockers. But
Yes.
But, yeah, I just remember, like, a lot of jingoistic, like, we're coming to kill you type of stuff. And we were right, but it took, like, 10 years.
Yeah, and millions of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah, exactly.
Billions.
But Common got him. Like, Common killed. I assume they don't explicitly state it.
Oh my god, it was Common.
But it's implied that Common assassinated Osama bin Laden.
He's like, I gotta go. They're calling me. And then
they're calling me. And it's the SEAL Team 6 raid.
You know who was calling? Obama.
Oh my god. Okay, well, we gotta just get into it.
We gotta do it. I mean, if you think about it, though, 2011, everyone was bored, and Gary Marshall's like, you know what will help? This ensemble comedy about knowing what is important and starting the year off on the right foot. And it, like, it's very well-meaning. It's just poorly executed.
It's trying so hard. Oh my god. I love movies that try hard. I really do. Our first storyline is Hillary Swank. She is Claire Morgan, the vice president of the Times Square Alliance.
Is that real?
I have no fucking idea. Basically, she's in charge of the ball drop. Like, and this is her first year as an officer in the Times Square Alliance. So there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, she's the vice president. She's worked her way to the top, which if anybody has ever wondered who is in charge of the ball, it's fucking Hillary Swank.
That's Hillary Swank. It's Academy Award winner Hillary Swank. She is ironically terrified of heights. So she has to have, and oh God, it's like, early on, what's the line here? I want to make sure I got this. It's like, today we'll want to see a show of strength from the New York City Police Department. Just a lot of just shots of cops.
Yes.
Just being like, yeah, NYPD, we're the best. They're not going to bomb the World Trade Center a third time. And so...
It's because there is no World Trade Center by then.
Right. So, a lot of that. And it's one of the questions I have, Nadia, is how many times during the movie do you think Gary Marshall was thinking, this is when everyone in the theater is going to applaud?
Oh, a lot. There are a lot. There are literally laugh line pauses. Like, yeah. It's a sitcom, and it's like, let's move this forward. This movie is 2 hours long.
2 hours long.
Wait, okay, so when we talk about this, are we going to talk about each storyline by itself or in order? Because I don't remember what happens in order.
My notes are just in chronological order of what happens in the film.
I'm just going to follow your lead then.
Okay. So we get introduced to Claire. She's scared of heights. She's really nervous for the big day. She gets reassured by her friend, the cop, who is ludicrous.
Ludicrous in the most low-energy performance of his career. He's just like, I don't want to do this, but I'm getting paid a lot of money. I'm dressed as a cop. I don't want to be dressed as a cop. Get back. You don't know me like that.
You don't know me like that. This is post-crash ludicrous. He's like, I like to think he did crash, and now he's like, maybe it's time to give the cops a turn.
he had to make his fuck you money. I get it.
So, I mean, like, look, by the time we get to the 2010s, he was not at the top of the charts. Let's just say it.
No, he wasn't. But he was in the Fast and the Furious franchise.
That's true. Like, he was making a lot of money there. You're right. Yeah. Okay, so that's one storyline. Okay. Next storyline, Zac Efron.
With a faux hawk. Zac Efron has a faux hawk.
Zac Efron, faux hawk. And don't worry, folks, he's going to be speaking entirely in African-American vernacular English the entire movie.
It's so cringy. So he works as a courier, a bike mail delivery guy, and he delivers something to Michelle Pfeiffer, who plays
Michelle Pfeiffer, who plays a lonely, miserable bitch.
Her hair is brown, so she is not pretty.
Works at a thankless job at a record label. And what we're going to learn is, like, she doesn't get her bonus this year, and she always dreamed of taking this big trip, and it's not going to happen. So she decides she's going to quit her job on a whim, and she's going to fulfill all of her New Year's resolutions in one night, which, as Nadia has already pointed out, is not anywhere close to how New Year's resolutions work.
No, and the other plot point that is just so poorly done is she almost gets run over by a car when we first meet her and then falls into a bag of garbage. So I think her justification for wanting to get as much done as possible is because she quote unquote almost died, but she fell into garbage. Yeah, okay. And then people tried to help her up and she's like, no, I don't need your help. It's like, girl, relax.
So she's trying to turn a life around. Yes. Next storyline, Sarah Paulson, Seth Meyers, Jessica Biel. You know what we're talking about. We're in the maternity ward where moms are racing to squeeze out the first baby of the new year.
Yes, because they win $25,000 if they win.
Yes.
Whoever's baby gets born first. Who was the guy?
I have no idea who Sarah Paulson's husband was. Okay. Sorry. I mean, with the stars shining this bright, a couple people are going to get lost in the glare.
Hold on. In New Year's Eve. I got to find out. We got to show some respect on this guy. This was a really big...
It was, you know, he did okay. He was, I would say, a better actor than Seth Meyers. And let me be clear, I like Seth Meyers.
Yeah, he's not a bad guy.
I like his late night show. I watch A Closer Look on YouTube, but I would not cast him in a film where he had to play a character.
I agree. Okay, so his name is Till Swiger. He was in Inglourious Basterds. And
Oh yeah. I know who he is in Inglourious Basterds. Okay,
I've never seen it. He's in a lot of action movies, so I've never seen him before because I don't watch that stuff because it makes me scared. Okay.
Yeah, he plays a Nazi. Does he or does he play Stieglitz? Oh, he plays Stieglitz. Okay. No, he's cool. He plays one of the bastards.
Okay, cool.
Okay. So they're like in a competition because they're like, oh shit, $25,000, we can pay off our student loans. So Seth Meyers leans over to his wife, Jessica Biel, and is like, get that fucking baby out of your womb.
Yeah, and she literally says to Sarah Paulson, it's on, because she's going to squeeze out that baby real fast. So they want, the storyline is that all of them want to induce labor so that they could have the first baby born of the year in that hospital to win the money.
Which, we don't need to get into personal experience. Inducing labor is not like they give you a shot and the baby appears.
It is if Gary Marshall's directing what's happening.
there's, if you're lucky, a couple hours that follow.
Shit. Yeah.
So
that's done.
So there's that.
Next.
Ashton. Favorite character in the whole movie, and I would say in any film I've ever seen. So Ashton Kutcher is hanging out in his apartment in his pajamas because he hates New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
Oh, he's walking around tearing down decorations. He's like, this is so stupid. And I literally wrote in my notes, it sounds like someone is about to learn to appreciate the magic of the world's greatest holiday in the world's greatest city.
And he has a beard and long hair, so you know he's an artist.
You know he's like kind of not like other guys. He's not as polished. He's not afraid to say what he's really thinking. Anyways, he's gonna get on the elevator. His new neighbor, Lea Michele.
Ugh. Sorry, I don't like her.
He's gonna get on the elevator with him. It is funny that Lea Michele, you know, became famous playing an archetype of a kind of person that everyone hates.
Yeah.
Which is the way over the top obnoxious theater kid, and now is like, why does everyone hate me?
It's true. And in this movie, she wins the award for best breath acting because she breathes so loudly. She's like, before every line. It's really annoying. But she gets stuck in an elevator with Ashton Kutcher. Yeah. And she's really excited about New Year's and he's not. So I think they're going to learn a few things about each other.
I think they're going to learn some things from each other. Okay. We got like two more storylines left and then we got our foundation in place. There is a wedding in Connecticut. The best man is Josh Duhamel.
And the groom is Joey McIntyre from New Kids on the Block.
but McIntyre's only there. He's only on screen for like a minute.
Yeah.
And Duhamel's like, hey, man, I got to get to New York. It's New Year's Eve. I really got to be in New York for New Year's Eve. He gets in his car, drives, crashes the car.
Yes. There is a very universal experience where the GPS tells him to go right, so he's going right, but then it's like, no, go left. And then he goes, has to go left, and then crashes.
Yeah.
I feel like that, I was like, I relate.
So famously in Chicago, we have Wacker Drive, and there's two Wacker Drives, Upper Wacker and Lower Wacker. One of the streets is built immediately under the other.
Oh.
So it's right by the river. So there's one down at river level and one above it. Upper Wacker, Lower Wacker. Lower Wacker, you can't get GPS.
And so,
because it's underground. It's where Batman chases the Joker in the Dark Knight.
Tight.
It's Lower Wacker.
Cool, okay.
And so,
I follow.
And so, first of all, it tells you to get onto Wacker Drive, and there's two Wackers, and there's like two ramps, and you're like, what the fuck am I doing? And then, when you get on one of them, you don't have GPS anymore. So yes, I get why he crashed his car.
For me, it's the 110. Just in general. Yes. Just the 110.
Okay. Actually, I take it back. There's three additional storylines. Okay. Bon Jovi.
Okay, no. So it starts with Katherine Heigl.
Yes, Katherine Heigl, who is a chef.
Yes, and she has two assistants, Sofia Vergara, who is horny, of course.
Yes.
And some other guy who I don't...
Russell Peters. He's a stand-up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry. Again, a small star eclipsed by a big one. Or in Sofia Vergara's case, two big ones.
Two giant boobs. with remarkable amount of cleavage she's able to show in a chef's uniform.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. So they are working a really big party, which ends up being Josh Duhamel's mom's party. That's how it's connected.
Josh Duhamel's mom owns the record company at which Michelle Pfeiffer works.
Right, and who is also representing Jensen, played by Jon Bon Jovi.
Yes.
Everybody has to follow. We have a lot to cover.
It's all connected.
It's all connected.
It's all, like, you, me, them. We're all connected.
Even though they're fictional. So Katherine Heigl is working as a chef at this big party. It's her first big, huge A-list party, and she wants to do very well. But she finds out that her ex is there. But her ex is Bon Jovi.
And, again, he's not playing Bon Jovi.
No, he's playing Jensen.
Jensen, who plays three different songs during the course of the movie. One of them is, and the first one we see him playing when he's in his trailer, Two Out of Three Ain't Bad, which is a Meatloaf tune. It's by Jim Steinman. It's a Meatloaf tune. He plays Have a Little Faith in Me later in the film. We'll talk about that scene later.
Oh, my God.
That's a John Hyatt cover, I believe. And then he plays Can't Turn You Loose when it comes to be actually New Year's Eve. So he didn't, at no point did anyone say, like, hey, why don't we just have him be Bon Jovi?
Or why don't we have Bon Jovi write an original song?
Or that.
Yeah.
But
no.
who could afford that?
Not this movie. They had to pay for so Ludacris.
So you have this sexual tension between them. And then we get to Abigail Breslin.
Oh, right. I forget about this one. This one's so stupid. So Abigail Breslin is a teenager who wants to spend New Year's Eve with her friends because she has a crush on a boy, and she's 15. But her mom, who's played by Sarah Jessica Parker, who is a costume designer for the Rockettes.
For the Rockettes,
which
yes.
is pretty cool. She doesn't want to... her to go out because she wants to spend time with her, but it's really because she doesn't want to go and have her own life, which is
she's scared to get back out there after her divorce or whatever.
There's so much going on,
so we hit a couple of these storylines a few more times. I'm not even gonna really belabor it. Nadia already said we learn why Katherine Heigl and Bon Jovi broke up, we learn why Michelle Pfeiffer quit. And then we introduce the final storyline, which is Robert De Niro.
I screamed, De Niro? And the guy from The Princess Bride?
And Cary Elwes is his doctor. And, I don't know, Nadia, I would be honored if you could tell us what Robert De Niro's storyline is in this movie.
So, Robert De Niro is in a hospital, tied up to a lot of wires and tubes and... a lot of stuff, and he's telling the guy from The Princess Bride that he doesn't want any treatment for cancer.
He's doing total DNR on this.
Yeah.
Just no chemo, no radiation,
nothing. And the doctor asks him, like, do you want me to call anybody? Like, you've refused any kind of treatment. Like, at least let me call someone that you know. And De Niro is like, I have fucked up so much in my life. But he doesn't say that because the one fuck word was said by Jessica Biel later. But he's like, I've messed up so many things in my life. Everybody hates me. I just want to die. It is bleak.
Very bleak. And then he says, you know why I picked this hospital?
Because on the roof is the perfect view of the ball drop. Robert De Niro, excuse me?
Robert De Niro plays a man who's first of all, dying perhaps a preventable death.
Yeah. We don't know what kind of cancer. Let's just put that out there. But he wants to spend his last moments watching the ball drop.
Watching the ball drop. And not to spoil it for you, but literally his dying words in the film are going to be, there's nothing like New Year's Eve in New York City.
Jesus Christ.
And also, his nurse is Halle Berry.
Oh, yeah.
So how is his dying wish not, can that nurse please jerk me off?
Oh, no. Well, it's because she has a date with Common. She wouldn't do it.
Yeah, we'll get to her. But...
Unbelievable. So. It's like, you have Robert De Niro, let him be a love interest for Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, sure. The man can do any... I mean, the thing... So, guys, there's an honest-to-God blooper reel at the end of this movie. And there's one blooper where De Niro makes a crack at Cary Elwes at one point, and I'm like, that man is such a professional. That man is just always on. He's so perfect at this. I mean, why are they sticking him in this role?
I don't know. I want to know... what Gary Marshall has on all of these people that got them in this. Because, like, I personally would be like, this is bad.
He's like, he goes to each person. He's like, how would you like to be in the reboot of Happy Days? And it's just, it's made up. But.
They didn't get Henry Winkler.
Oh. They're like, is Henry Winkler coming back? He's like, hey, maybe you're going to be the Fonz this time, Robert De Niro.
what if the writer of this movie pitched this to Ron Howard and Gary Marshall. And it was going to be like a Happy Days thing. But Ron Howard backed out because he was doing the new season of Arrested Development.
Sure, yes. Which also probably shouldn't have been but
oh my God. Truly and honestly, I mean, we have conflict. We have vague conflict. Let's say that.
Vague conflict.
We have vague conflict in every character. But I think this is just supposed to be kind of like a celebrity circle jerk. Like the dopamine's supposed to like rush to your brain every time you see them.
Yes. Yes. It's like, oh my God, Seth Meyers on screen again?
Oh my God. It's Bon Jovi and he's singing a song with Lea Michele. Instant boner.
That nice girl from the gay TV show. And so, I think I told you, right? So Disney Plus got the rights to stream Glee.
Oh my God.
And they put it up. They put it up over the summer. It was in June. And it was like, it was in the Celebrate Pride Month section. And this was like right after the whole Don't Say Gay bill. This was after the whole fight between Disney and the Florida state government. And like, I'm like, Disney, I know you're trying to make things right, but not like this.
No.
Don't make people watch Glee.
Don't make people watch anything about with Ryan Murphy producing it or directing it.
Yeah, Jesus. Except the O.J. Simpson series was good. I'm going to give him that one.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, those are all the storylines. Okay. So, I feel like we should do the scene where Hilary Swank explains to the audience how the ball drop works.
Yes, because apparently people don't know. I have a question. I personally am not super familiar with a lot of things about America just because of like how I grew up. So like American idioms don't make sense to me. I don't know them. I don't know why people use them so often. I don't understand New Year's Eve.
Okay, well, so it's there's not much to understand.
Like when it comes to the ball dropping and like Dick Clark and all of that, like what's the deal? Yeah. It's such a big deal.
It's literally this. I mean, do you remember when we talked about Hocus Pocus and we said the only reason people think this movie is a classic is because it was just on TV all the time? Like there's no redeeming features to it. The script is bad. The acting is mostly bad.
Yeah.
This New Year's Eve was just on TV a long time.
Oh.
Like NBC would or whoever would put Dick Clark and a bunch of bands on.
Okay.
And they would just do that every year and it was like, "Oh, it's a tradition. We all got to watch it." And then people were like, "Oh, we all got to go to it." And as happens with anything that's been around a while, it becomes commoditized, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, "Oh, we got to camp out for a good spot to view the ball drop." So it's, you know, it's just dumb. It's a terrible night to go out. Everybody on the road is drunk off their ass.
Yeah.
There's nothing good on TV unless you're watching the Three Stooges marathon on cable.
or this movie.
Or this movie. And, this isn't you failing to understand. This isn't you doing some sort of Amelia Bedelia type failure to process an idiom. This is just a bad holiday that sucks.
Okay.
And like you said, just like Valentine's Day, there's a lot of pressure to do something or you're protesting the holiday. I always stay in and watch TV.
Okay. Yeah, so what we do is there's like little traditions that in Mexican culture you do, like right when the clock strikes 12, you eat 12 grapes, one for month a good luck, and then you run outside with a suitcase and you circle your lawn 3 times for good, like for travel. And then like if you want love, you wear red underwear. If you want money, you wear yellow underwear.
Okay, now I think maybe you are kind of like an Amelia Bedelia type figure. Because I've never heard of any of this.
Come hang out for New Year's at my parents' house. It's so fun. And then you throw a bucket of water outside to, like, get rid of the evil eye that you've been given.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
All of that. It's like...
No, I respect that. As an Italian, I respect getting rid of the evil eye.
It's all about superstition. So, like, the concept of, like, watching a giant metal ball go up and down doesn't make sense to me, but like thinking of warding off evil spirits by throwing out a bucket of water, that totally does. So like I think I just needed someone to explain it.
So Hilary Swank's like, the ball has 30,000 light bulbs on it or whatever. So she explains what that is. Abigail Breslin wants to go to the Times Square ball drop because one of her high school classmates is there and she wants to kiss him at midnight.
Right.
And Sarah Jessica Parker's like, no, you can't do that. You're staying in with me. And Abigail Breslin's like, you're just scared of the world. The world doesn't scare me, Mom. It's just getting good. Ooh. This is 2011, so she was wrong.
No, yeah. Also, when you're 15, the world gets worse for a little while. And then you turn 30 and you stop caring.
I like to imagine Abigail Breslin did think the world was getting good and she was just a white supremacist.
Oh!
She's like, the 2010s are going to be an amazing decade for me, Mom.
Arian Breslin.
Yeah. Probably should have introduced its best character yet, Arian Breslin.
She's going to sue me. Please don't sue me, Abigail Breslin.
But this is where we get the line, I'm not a kid anymore, Mom, and this isn't a training bra. And then she pulls up her shirt and flashes her boobs at her mom. Which did not seem like we needed in the script.
No. And now 15-year-old Abigail Breslin has her little boobies on everyone's Blu-ray who has this movie. It's really bad. I don't like this.
Fine. Okay. Well, the good news is any storyline you don't like, we just rotate to the next one. So that's what
we're another
do.
One
so
I don't like.
Say, yeah. Every time you say, I don't like this, we go, boom, Michelle Pfeiffer. She's like, I'm going to do my resolutions. So she grabs Zac Efron on the street and she's like, I bought you for the day.
Ugh.
So human trafficking, first of all, number two, she's like, this is, my list of resolutions. And if you can help me do all of these, I will give you these tickets to a weird sex party.
And no, it's Jensen's.
I know it's the record.
It's the record label
party,
which is like where all the babes are.
It's where all the babes are, and it's a masquerade.
Yes.
So I see a mask. You know, I use Firefox, and when you do a private browsing window in Firefox, they have a masquerade mask as the logo, because they know what's up. And so
they've seen this movie. They know what's happening. We also find out that. Zac Efron is roommates with Ashton Kutcher, so that's how that's connected.
It's all
so
connected.
He's like, bro, I'm gonna take you to this incredible party, bro, and this old lady is gonna help us. And so he promises this to Ashton Kutcher and then never hears from Ashton Kutcher throughout the day because he's stuck in an elevator with Lea Michele.
Right. You know, in after the test screenings, they were like, Zac Efron, we have to reshoot all your scenes and you can't say that word anymore. So Ashton and Lea Michele, they're stuck in an elevator and they're getting to know each other. And Ashton thinks Lea Michele is annoying,
mm-hmm.
which is true. Lea Michele thinks Ashton is grumpy, which is also kind of true. I love that Ashton says he hates going out on New Year's because he's worried about people going Kanye on him.
Which,
you know, going Kanye, threatening to murder all the Jewish people.
Terrible. Even back then, 2011 also was the year Katy Perry released that E.T. song with Kanye on it. And already
That's
by
right.
then, Kanye was kind of losing his edge.
Losing his grip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously he went, now he's autistic. Did you hear about that?
You know, I just hope he gets help and someone takes away his internet connection.
Yeah, I agree.
So they aren't getting along yet.
No, but she does take off her coat so that she could climb the elevator to try to open a latch. And then Ashton Kutcher sees that girl got a badonkadonk. So he starts to respect her.
You're right. Like, I respect you so much for your fat ass. And so,
and she's wearing one of those very early 2010s outfits that's like a dress that looks like it's made from like ribbons.
Yes, very
of the time.
But anyways, what they learn about each other is that she is a backup singer. She is actually supposed to be at the Jensen show in Times Square tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And this was possibly going to be her big break because she just hasn't been making it. And this is a big chance for her to get some exposure. and she wants to finally make something happen in her career. And if she doesn't, if she's stuck in this elevator, if she doesn't make this show, then who are they going to put? They might put maybe the girl from Booksmart. Maybe they put her in as a backup singer. And, you know, the reviews will be bad, but everybody will be like, oh, that's pretty funny. They didn't put Lea Michele on stage. They put the girl from Booksmart in, and I'll just go on for months until they finally put me in.
But then the lady who plays Sue Sylvester from Glee just randomly decides to leave when she sees that Lea Michele's joining the show. And
yes. She's like, no, I'm done with this.
Justice for Beanie Feldstein.
Justice for Beanie Feldstein. I don't, you know, to be clear, Lea Michele didn't say any of that. And if that was in the script, she wouldn't have said it because, as we all know, Lea Michele can't read. And so...
Yeah.
So you kind of see, we're just having fun here, guys.
Yeah, but we also learned that Ashton Kutcher hates New Year's for a reason.
Yeah, his ex dumped
him. He got broken up with on New Year's Eve. Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyways, so what else? Bon Jovi, we learn, you know, he walked out on Katherine Heigl after proposing to her. And Sofia Vergara says, in a very Sofia Vergara accent, in my country, I'm not going to do her accent. Sorry, just let's get that out of the way right away. Sofia Vergara says, in my country, a man gets down on one knee because he wants to get married or he just got shot. And I'm like, oh, so really just the one type of joke.
Yeah.
Then.
Yeah. In my country. Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay when it's you okay. do it.
I got asked I had a callback for a commercial and they were like, can you do like a Latina accent? And I was like, what kind? And they were like, just, you know, a Latina accent. And I hadn't had anything prepared. So I just did a Sofia Vergara impression. And I got a...
They're like...
I got a callback for that. Oh, that was the first one.
I was like, yeah, like standing ovation.
They were like, wow. Hallmark. Anyways, okay.
And then, meanwhile, Zac Efron is actually helping Michelle Pfeiffer out.
He is.
One of her resolutions is go to Bali, which he doesn't take her to Bali. But he takes her to a hidden warehouse massage parlor where clearly rich people have been doing Squid Game to each other.
Happy endings guaranteed, and it's in Brooklyn, right. Not Bali.
Right. And so, so he's like, oh, I'm kind of finding these sidelong ways to get your resolutions done. Meanwhile, Abigail Breslin gets in a fight with her mom. She runs away. Her mom's solution was to knock on her door and bring in Fig Newtons, which is such a... bullshit
Fig
cookie.
Newtons and a glass of milk. I would be like, get out of my room. It's Biscoff or nothing.
Come. You bring Oreos and maybe we'll talk. So. But finally, we get the just this overwhelming buildup and orgasmic introduction of Mr. New Year's Eve himself, Ryan Seacrest.
Yes, also with a faux hawk. This was the year of the faux hawk. Yeah, and he introduces I guess he doesn't introduce the ball. He just says, it's time for the ball to fucking go. And so the ball, they flip the switch, the ball starts going up, but it breaks.
Yes.
Oof, there's a short, and all these lights come out, and everyone's groaning, and Hilary Swank is like, oh my God, I'm going to ruin New Year's Eve.
All caps in my notes, oh God, the ball is broken.
So nobody can figure out what's going on, and so they call in this really mysterious and elusive character named Kaminsky.
Kaminsky, the only electrician who can fix things, but he doesn't work there anymore for some mysterious reason. And he comes in, and good news, it's Hector Elizondo.
Yeah, you can't have a Gary Marshall movie without Hector Elizondo, but he's playing a Russian immigrant.
Is it right? Because Kaminsky, I'm like, maybe he's Polish, maybe he's Russian. Why couldn't they just make him Hector Elizondo?
But he has some sort of strange Eastern European accent. Yeah. And he's like, you fired me. I am not going to fix this. But then why did you show up? I don't know.
It's like, you give me job back. I replace light bulb. Like that sort of thing. And it's okay when I do that accent.
Sure.
But,
it's not okay when I do
But Hillary... No. Hillary Swank has to give a speech for some reason, to talk about the ball being broken.
Oh, yeah, because somebody has to be held responsible.
And this is like George W. Bush at Ground Zero, like level inspirational music. This, I'm just watching it, like, I was clapping throughout this movie. I'm like, this is amazing that they went so hard.
At this point, I took out my phone and started to play the puzzle game that I play when I need to, like, do something because I'm bored. So I'm playing 10-10 while she's talking about the importance of New Year's because it is a symbol.
In a way, we're all supposed to pause to reflect on our triumphs. On her missteps. And while she's doing this, by the way, it's cutting to all the other storylines.
Yeah,
right?
So De Niro's watching her.
Yeah.
Who else is watching her? The hospital where the babies are being born, they're all watching her. Apparently Matthew Broderick was watching because, yeah, he's in this too.
We'll get to him. We'll get to him.
Unbelievable. Okay, what's next?
So, okay. The musical number, John Hyatt, have a little thing.
God.
So Bon Jovi goes out and plays at the record party, and he's like, you know, it's Have a Little Faith in Me by John Hyatt, which is a good tune. And as he's playing it, it cuts to Lea Michele in the elevator, who is singing it to herself separately at the same time. And I wrote, oh my God, it's a full musical number. I'm so happy.
And it's not like you can fast forward through this scene because we have other storylines cutting in between. So you'll miss like 80% of that plot because these plot lines are so thin. And so this is because Ashton Kutcher had asked her to sing for him. And she had asked him to draw for her because he was an artist, comic book artist.
He's a cartoonist. Yeah. Or a comic book artist. Yeah.
So this was her doing it, but we get the intercut, so it's all together and it sounds nice. And it's like, you're subjecting me to listen to Lea Michele.
Do you understand that we're all connected to each other?
I do, but I don't want to be connected to Lea Michele.
Anyways, more shit happens, and actually, Ashton and Lea Michele are actually about to smooch, in the elevator, by the end of this, but, just in the nick of time, the super comes back, it's Jim Belushi, womp womp, and so...
Yep, they had to get out of the elevator, they couldn't bone, it's too sad.
Right. So anyways, that's a 75-minute mark in the film. We should talk about Josh Duhamel.
Yes. So he gets towed back by the guy who plays the hairdresser in Princess Diaries.
Yes. Miller. He's the dad in 10 Things I Hate About You also.
So Larry Miller, he drives him over back to the church where Joey McIntyre had just gotten married. And the pastor is going to give Josh Duhamel a ride in his big giant trailer truck thing. It's like a tour bus with his whole family in there. And everyone's hanging.
Well, it's an RV.
It's an RV. And everyone's hanging out and they're like, so what's your story, guy? You're in a tuxedo. What's your deal? And he's like, I'm going to do a speech. It's my father's company. I don't really know what I'm going to say yet. And they're like kind of bringing out stories for him to get inspiration about. And they ask him about last New Year's Eve. And Tony, a very special thing happened last New Year's Eve.
He met someone.
A mysterious woman.
Mysterious woman, never got her name. And by the way, the comic relief in this scene, as he's telling this story, because the story is he met this mysterious woman, never got her name. They really hit it off. And she's like, if you really want this to turn into something, meet me 1 year from tonight, next New Year's Eve at the same restaurant. So that's where he's going. Yeah. He wants to be with her. And this whole time, there's a horny grandpa that's like, did you put your dick inside her?
Yeah. He's like, did you tap that? Yeah. Like, it's so, you know, this was before Robert De Niro presumably came back to life and did Bad Grandpa.
Bad Grandpa, yes. This was the OG. This was Robert De Niro, you know, went to the premiere of New Year's Eve and he was like, God, that's such a bad grandpa. Hey, wait a second.
Yeah, so what's really happening is Josh Duhamel is going to his dad's company's party to do the speech, but he's realizing that what's more important is possibly going to see this girl. So he's kind of conflicted. He's not sure what to do.
Right.
But don't worry.
Not sure.
There's New Year's Eve traffic, so he has plenty of time to think about it.
Yeah. Hillary Swank still hasn't fixed the ball yet, and she gets a visit from the president of the Times Square Alliance, who, as Nadia already pointed out, is Matthew Broderick, star of Stage and Screen. He is playing a character. Movie would have been 10 times funnier if he played himself.
Oh.
If the head of the Times Square Alliance was literally Matthew Broderick, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, because apparently you can't have a movie with Sarah Jessica Parker without Matthew.
No, they have to be together. It's in the contract.
They come as a set, do not separate. And he's like, look, you're going to ruin New Year's Eve for millions, if not billions of people watching around the world.
Billions of people.
Who are watching the ball drop around the world and are expecting it to happen. You better fix this or I'm going to find a new vice president of the fake Times Square Alliance. So the stakes are really, really high for Hillary Swank.
Yeah. Stakes are high. The good news is Kaminsky finds the light bulb, and amazingly, it must be the magic of New Year's Eve, but tonight, it only takes one Polish person to screw in a light bulb.
You motherfucker. That's good.
I thought of that at dinner tonight. I'm like, oh, this is gonna kill. And so So he replaces the light bulb. Ball gets fixed. Okay, it's all coming together. Everybody's excited. Jensen goes out to play in Times Square. Lea Michele grinds on him throughout the evening. Ashton Kutcher catches her backstage, gets the kiss. Then, for some reason, she goes back onto the stage because she's going to do another song.
She's going to do another song because Jensen bails on his performance because he wants to make what happened with Katherine Heigl right. Because I guess Sofia Vergara, with her boobies, convinced him that he needed to fix it. And so he runs and he's like, I messed up, but I want to do this again. I'm canceling my tour. Which, doesn't that mean that Lea Michele doesn't have a job?
I don't know, man. And then Hillary Swank is in the command center, you know, and they're like, hey, Hillary Swank, Mayor Bloomberg is on the phone for you. He says he wants you to be also mayor because your speech was so good or whatever. And she's like, sorry guys, I can't talk to Bloomberg right now. And she runs to the hospital to see her dad, who is
Robert De Niro. But there's a red herring because she says earlier in the movie to Ludacris, she's like, why did I tell you about him? Boop, boop, boop. So you think that maybe it's Josh Duhamel. So she's running, and you're thinking she's going to the restaurant to meet Josh Duhamel. No, she's going to meet her dying father.
The classic Gary Marshall mess around.
Yeah, so she gets there, and Halle Berry's like, I really don't want you to be alone. And you hear Hillary Swank say, he's not alone. And then they pull the curtain aside. It's Hillary Swank. Robert De Niro is so excited. He's like, the ball's dropping. So she kidnaps him and takes him in a wheelchair up to the roof so he can watch the ball drop. Presumably, and then to die.
And then die. And so some other stuff going on. I do want to back up a second and talk about Zac Efron.
Yeah.
Because
I forgot about that one.
There is a scene where he takes Michelle Pfeiffer to like the giant Lego model of New York or whatever, and she walks all over it, and he's like, you're walking through all 5 boroughs in one day, see? And then he gets a call from his friend
Ashton Kutcher
and says very loudly in an echoing room 4 feet away from Michelle Pfeiffer. It's like, yeah, no, I'm with this old woman right now who's super pathetic, and I'm helping her with her New Year's resolutions.
Yeah, and obviously she hears it, and she's like, I don't want to do this anymore.
It.
I'm pathetic.
Am I a bet to you? Am I a fucking bet? Like, and then just leaves.
And Zac Efron is obviously mortified because he was such a ding-dong, and so he chases after her, and then we cut to another story because, like, this one barely has any kind of anything.
Very, very thin. So, you know, so the ball actually, like, starts dropping, right? So, other stuff that is going on here, Robert De Niro's nurse is Halle Berry, and she finishes her shift, she puts on a sexy dress, and she's like, I gotta go see my man, and she gets on a Skype call with Common, who is a troop, as we've discussed. And again, I think this is a moment where when he comes on, the theater bursts into applause. They're like, what? Troops? They're like the NYPD for Iraq. And they just, like, go nuts.
Yes, yes. And so there's a lot of, you're going to come home soon kind of rhetoric. Yeah. Very, very intense. Yes. Halle yes. Berry, an incredible actress, is just selling the hell out of it. She's like, I'm in this movie for like 5 minutes total. I'm going to make them count.
I do want to cover one last thing as the ball drops, which is Zac Efron finding Michelle Pfeiffer again.
How did he find her and all of those people?
I don't remember.
There's not a lot of logic to this movie.
But he just runs up to her and kisses her, and she's like, I'm old enough to be your grandma. And he's like, but you wanted to have a kiss at midnight, and she's like, I want your young cock.
I hate that. It's very, very strange. It's very strange. I think he hit all of her New Year's resolutions. One was to travel around the world, and he found like a big statue of the world and circled it a few times. They had breakfast at Tiffany's. And some other bullshit.
Because they had like a bagel outside of Tiffany's, and then they had that other bullshit. Who cares? Okay. The baby, the New Year's baby.
Oh, we forgot about the babies.
Yeah. Seth Meyers and Jessica Biel technically have their baby first, but they're like, no, you guys can have the $25,000.
Yeah, because they saw that they had two other kids, so they have three kids versus their one kid. And so they're like, this guy with the accent needs the money, not us.
Right. I mean, he has an accent.
Yeah, it's very white people bleeding heart kind of thing. Like, this is something that would happen on White Lotus.
So there's that. And then Josh Duhamel. I think that's the last thing we got to tie up.
Yeah, so Josh Duhamel, you think that he's going to meet with Hilary Swank, but instead he meets with no one because the restaurant closed down. And so he's just sitting out there. And then he hears a clip-clop, clip-clop of a horse. No, it's not a horse. It's Sarah Jessica Parker, though a lot of people think she looks like one.
Well, she comes in like a hansom cab, right? Like that's...
Yes.
It's a shame. I don't think Gary Marshall knew.
He didn't know about the Sarah Jessica Parker looks like a horse.tumblr.com.
No. But that's his flame, is Sarah Jessica Parker. They end up together, and that's like literally it. And there's a voiceover at the end of De Niro's ghost speaking from hell, saying,
"It's Josh Duhamel."
Oh, it's Josh Duhamel. Okay, I like to imagine it's De Niro in hell, saying, "You know, there are all sorts of things we can't control, but it's important to remember the things we can control, like second chances." First thing I said out loud was like, that's not something you can control.
No.
But that's what New Year's Eve is to me. It's hope and love and a great party. What a fucking empty lesson.
That's so upsetting. Also, like, I don't care about anyone in this movie. And it was 2 hours long.
Oh, Abigail Breslin, she didn't kiss the boy she liked. Whatever.
Oh, no, she did. Well, what ended up happening was, as the ball dropped, some girl kissed him, and she saw it, was heartbroken, and then ran into Sarah Jessica Parker's arms and was like, Mom, blah, and then saw the kid later at a deli, and he was like, no, I was waiting for you, and then she kissed him.
Yeah. Okay, whatever.
I mean, who cares?
When Josh Duhamel was at the record party, there were all these hot women being like, we'll peg you or whatever. Because, like, that was like...
Yeah.
He's, like, talking to these two hot women. They're like, we'll both go home with you. I'll be behind you. I'm like, so you're gonna fuck his ass? I mean, it's fine if he's into it. It's fine. But
Yeah. If it's all consensual, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna judge what consenting adults do. I think that's great. I think it's great that he's exploring. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. Josh Duhamel's a bottom. We all know that.
Yeah, it is. It is weird to be so upfront about it during a dinner party, I think.
It's true. But yeah, but he's like, I don't want these empty trysts anymore. I want love. Right. And so he runs to the empty restaurant.
So that's New Year's Eve. Like I said, I will be watching this every year on New Year's Eve for the rest of my life. This is my favorite movie we've watched for the show. No. It is so trying so hard and it fails so miserably at what it attempts to do.
Yeah.
That I just enjoyed every minute of it.
I think it is still... No, it's worse than He's Just Not That Into You. Yeah, it's worse.
I would agree. I think it is worse. I think He's Just Not That Into You had slightly fewer storylines.
Yeah, and it had Ben Affleck's new teeth.
It had a better cast. I mean, and it's weird to say, because there's obviously, like, some very good actors in this cast. Like, you know, Halle Berry's a good actor, mm-hmm, right?
Yes.
Like, even, like, Zac Efron, I feel, can be a good triple threat when he has to be. But none of them have anything to do in this movie. I mean, Robert De Niro has less than 10 minutes of screen time, even.
Yeah, I was thinking during the blooper reel that we got at the end, I was just like... These people are stars, but only if the writing is good.
Right.
Because it's bad.
So there's a scene in the blooper reel where Cary Elwes, as the doctor, is grabbing the chart off Robert De Niro's bed, and he like fumbles it. He almost drops it. And Robert De Niro just looks up. He's like, I would not want you as my doctor. And it was just like, it was really funny and charming. Just as like a throwaway joke. Like, I'm not saying like that. He said that and it changed my life. It was just like, oh, that made me laugh. That was cute.
Yeah. They should have just let everybody just Judd Apatow it and just improvise the entire movie, because it would have been better.
The same length, right?
Yeah.
It would have been better.
No, it would have been half an hour longer, honestly.
So I want to play another round of DVD or date, Nadia.
Ooh, okay.
I have three movies for you. Now, like I said, this movie was obviously inspired by Love Actually.
Mm-hmm.
It is not the only movie that was inspired by Love Actually. And there were a lot of movies in the 2000s and 2010s that were. And several of them are ones that I either own on DVD or saw on a date. So I'm going to give you three movies and you have to guess which ones are which.
Okay. I'm ready.
So the first is the original from 2002, Love Actually, the most British film of all time.
Which we could argue is only good because they're British.
Only good because they're British and because of the cast. The cast is so stellar. Because
they're all, actually trained, beautiful, wonderful British actors.
Ooh, we have Katherine Heigl in our movie. Okay, well, Alan Rickman, was fucking in the West End doing Macbeth when he was 12. Like, what are you...
Yeah, although he did get more success later in life. But, you know, you should read his book. His journals. I would say, how old were we in 2002?
2002, we were 14.
Oh, I'm going to say DVD, because I don't know when you started dating, and I feel that, 13 or 14 is very young.
Okay, that's actually a really good process there that you use, because that is correct. I do own this film on DVD.
So do I.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
The next movie was a Best Picture winner.
Okay.
Which I believe the working title was Race Actually, and it's called Crash.
Oh. Date. This sounds like something that you would go on a date to because you want to seem very cultured.
That is incorrect.
Damn
I did
it.
Not see it on a date, but I do own it on DVD.
I made such a large assumption about you just then.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And then the third and final movie, which was a Best Picture nominee the following year, actually, and I believe the pitch was, what if we made a badder version of Crash?
Oh.
And it's a movie with Brad Pitt and Cate Blanchett called Babel, directed by... Alejandro Iñárritu.
Oh, okay, I remember this one. I'm gonna say date.
That is a date, because I actually did want to seem cultured.
I got you, dude. I know you.
And
bad mood, though. It has Brad Pitt in it, dude. What's happening?
Yeah, also, it's not very good. That's the other... That's the other piece of it. Okay, do our friends at Common Sense Media have anything to say about New Year's Eve?
They sure do. Just like the movie, the reviews were also kind of sparse and skinny. So I'm just going to read you a few. I have two from parents. The first one says, and I'm going to read it just as it's written, okay? It's a lot of that's which makes me think maybe it's not parents that wrote this.
Yeah.
I watched this movie on New Year's Eve, and it had Bon Jovi in it. That was the review.
Okay.
The second period review, heartwarming. It was worming, like W-O-R-M-I-N-G.
Ugh. So, like, it's like something you'd give a dog to, like.
It's the heartworm medicine. You make the dog watch this. Okay. Kid reviews. One kid said, this is a very good movie, and it's very funny. Don't lie. Because it's obviously gotten a lot of bad reviews. It has 2 stars.
Yeah, it did not do well.
It did not do well. Fourth kid review. New Year's Eve was full of good role models. I was surprised. I wasn't a fan of Zac Efron kissing a 50-year-old lady, though. So, yeah, they also felt uncomfortable. The last one is also a kid review. They say, one lady says fucking while giving birth, but so did I. I had my baby 6 weeks ago. I had her on senior graduation, and I don't blame this woman for cursing. It is still very good if you are okay for your child to hear the F word. This lady is just giving up personal information. On a review.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think for the most part, people think it's good in the same way I'm sure people think, you know, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days is good or something. It's like, yeah, this is good.
Well, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we won't bring up that movie again at any point in the near future. So, this was a very enjoyable experience for me, Nadia. I was laughing my ass off the whole time.
Not in the way they intended.
No, absolutely not in the way they intended. But it was, I just, A+ for everything. The, you know, Robert De Niro's dying wish to the Michael Bloomberg cameo. I mean, that all just seals it for me.
I did really enjoy seeing Ludacris and Joey McIntyre.
Yeah.
That was really fun. I don't like that I had to sit through Lea Michele singing twice. Because, like I said, they were intercutting everything. Because there was such little plot that if you fast-forwarded 10 seconds of that song, you would miss a huge part of the plot. So just for the fact that I couldn't fast-forward Lea Michele, I'm giving this, like, a D.
Yeah, okay. Well, A+ for me. which it's rare that we get that configuration of grades where Nadia doesn't like something and I love
it. Wait, but are you being ironic about that you like it, or do you really like it?
No, I mean, like, it's a very poorly made film. I don't like it. Like, I guess I should clarify that.
I'm confused.
I think this is dumb as shit, but the fact that Gary Marshall, like, set out to make the greatest movie of all time and ended up with this, and that is the precipitous decline in creative juice that happened there is so funny to me.
God. Okay, so unironically, you didn't like it, but ironically enjoyed it.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're just such a complicated person. Jeez.
Because I am. I contain multitudes. But when we watch some movies, there are some that are like this that I'm like, this is so stupid. I'm enjoying it. And there are some that are like, this is so stupid and it's unwatchable.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I thought it was unwatchable. I probably wouldn't watch it again. It's something that I, like, not to insult my mom, I feel like my mom would really like this.
Oh, moms would love this film.
Yeah, I don't think people who can watch movies with, like, a critical eye or, like, can't have no other way to watch it because they're in the industry in some way, I feel like won't like this. But if you just want to turn your brain off, it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, any other final thoughts, Nadia?
I'm glad they stopped doing this. The ensemble thing.
When you say they stopped doing this, do you mean they killed Gary Marshall?
No, I love Gary Marshall. He's one of the best rom-com directors ever. I'm talking about the huge ensemble movie.
Yes, the everything is connected rom-com. Yeah, we have gotten away from that. Well, that's because everything is a 10-hour Netflix series.
Wait, that's not true. That is so not true. What are the Avengers? It's this.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
Shit.
Oh, shit. No, this movie ate everything.
Martin Scorsese was right.
Yeah, Scorsese's always right.
He should have done that essay about this kind of thing, and then maybe we would have been saved.
So, folks, I hope you're enjoying hell with both of us. and we will be off next week because it's Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
But we will be back.
Happy holidays.
We will be back in 2023 with some new episodes for you. So, Nadia, always a pleasure, and Happy New Year to you. Also, yeah, we want to shout out Greg, who donated on our Ko-Fi page. If you want to donate, the link is in the show notes. Throw us a couple bucks, help keep the show going. We love you. We'll see you next week.
Bye!